Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
A Dear Media original podcast.
She softened you.
She opened you up.
I feel like she was allowing me to be able to be me and kind of brought the better traits out. And that was like the first relationship, probably in my life, that like was like a first real, real relationship.
So your first love.
What's up, everybody? Welcome in. We've got another episode of Back to the Beach with Kristen and Steven. I'm Steven Coletti.
I'm Kristen Cavallari.
There she is. And we've got a very special guest today, an episode that we've been looking forward to for a while, Mr. Jason Waller.
Well, hello, guys.
Jason, welcome.
It's so good to see you guys.
We've been talking about this episode the entire season. Every week, we're like, we need to just talk to Jason about this. Where is Jason? Get him on. We need to talk to him and pick his brain. We have so much to unpack with you.
You guys are going to have to help me unpack. I don't remember most of it. This will be good.
Much to discuss. Speaking of unpacking, you just moved to Tennessee, where we are shooting this right now.
Yes, I moved to Tennessee.
Where were you before?
I was in Orange County, Laguna Beach.
Good old Laguna.
Yeah, good old Laguna.
And we just bumped into each other about 4 or 5 months ago for the first time in, man, it's been, I mean, we spoke over text for a second, but we ran into each other at the Montage in Laguna. You were with your family. I was on a date,
yes,
by the way.
Yes.
It was a second
very
date.
Pretty girl.
Yeah,
very
pretty girl. We are still together.
Oh.
Shout out Alex.
Yes, yes.
And man,
hi,
it was,
Alex.
It was the first time in, I hadn't seen you in like over 12, 13 years. It had been a minute.
We hadn't seen each other face to face at least in 12, 13 years.
It kind of floored me. I mean, it was so good to see you, but I was also shocked. It reminded me of like, why haven't we seen each other in so long? Like,
yeah, it was special. It was really good to connect with you and see you again, because I think instantly it was just, you know, there's so many memories that came back and it's like, we got to reconnect. Same thing with you. I didn't see Kristen for 10, 12 years,
know.
You know? But I also, you know, went through my own trials and tribulations that I had to work out and go through. And I kind of disappeared for a while. And I think that was, it was part of my process and it was what I had to go through. And, but here we are today and, you know, so stoked to be here with both of you.
Well, okay. So back up for a minute, because we've talked about on the show how after you had graduated, you went up to San Francisco and then you moved to LA. But then when we graduated, you guys ended up living together. How did that happen?
The connection is Dieter. By the way, which is kind of odd because you guys weren't good friends growing up.
No, we weren't good
friends. It was kind of through Laguna that we all became friends. Or Dieter and I obviously were good friends, but for you and him, I mean, you guys shared an ex-girlfriend.
Yeah, totally forgot about that.
Was that the
bonding moment? Oh my God, that's right.
Yeah.
Good old Jessica.
There's so many questions with that. But okay. So how did you guys all end up moving in together?
Do you remember the first time you hung out with Dieter? Because you guys got an apartment together in LA and it was the first place that you guys got in LA. It was the first place that I got. Yeah. And I wasn't even supposed to live there with you guys, but I wound up jumping on the couch for a little while, which turned into a few months longer than that. I like wound up getting a little twin bed and pushing it into Dieter's room.
Like, dude, I
remember. And you were dating Lauren at this time?
I literally had that place. And I think I stayed there once. And I was because we had it together. We partied there, but then I'd leave to go to Lauren's house. And Steven and Dieter kind of took over that place. But I think with Dieter, I think when I started like dating Lauren, he came into my life a little bit more.
Okay.
I think
that makes sense.
I think with this, like the circles, I think it was just those Three Arch Bay, which is a beach for everybody that we used to always go to. Mm-hmm. I think it was just kind of like we all started to connect down there, because that time it was like the whole, it was like us as seniors then were friends with, we were started hanging out with the seniors when we were freshmen. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like there was just this click of 4 year separation, but we all started hanging out down there. Yeah. And then that's, I think, how it initially started. And then Dieter and I, we just like, dude, after the show, I was supposed to go to college, you know, right. I think like any of us were supposed to. And
minor detour real quick.
Yeah. But then going up with Talon all the time, yes! God, I blame everything on Talon. It's
same!
His fault. It's all his fault.
That's what I talk about all the time.
Because 17 years old, we were going up to LA and, you know, and he's like, come up, we'll go out and stuff. Because we're always doing these house parties, right, in Laguna. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's kind of how this all came together too. Definitely the move initiated this. Mm-hmm. He brings us up. And I remember this club called Element.
Yes.
He brings us in the back door.
Because Talon was fucking cool.
Talon was
LA.
Legit.
Like, he hung out with like all the cool people.
He was plugged in LA.
He got through the back doors. He knew all the celebrities. And we were like, whoa, Talon's life is so fun.
Yeah. Me and Cedric looked at each other. Like, it was like one of those like super stupid moments. It was like, what was it? Night at the Roxbury. We looked at each other. We're like, high five. Like,
we're getting in, man.
Like, we got into the club and it was just, it was like from there, dude, that's when it was like almost every weekend. Mm-hmm. That's when we started doing the roadies up there.
It wasn't even every weekend though. I remember when we were living together there, it was every single night. It was like, we get invited to the opening of an envelope and we go. We're like, oh, you know, who's throwing a party tonight? It was LA. There was always something going on. And because we were on this TV show, which again, we were still not really processing that, like, people were like, oh, you should come be a part of this event because you're on this TV show and like help us sell some shit. So you go to the red carpet and you fucking hold a bottle of vodka. Yeah. What's up? And then you go in and party and we're like, sweet, free booze.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, honestly, it was basically Monday through Sunday. It was every single freaking night.
It was. But I was saying though, it was prior to
when
it was when we were still in high school. Yeah. Like we were going up there doing those roadies and especially in the summer.
Oh, okay.
But
what are roadies?
Like, we're just doing
drinks.
You're making roadies for the drive from Laguna?
From Laguna to LA.
That's
Laguna
what I call a roadie.
I thought you guys were going on roadies.
Miss school. Like, I missed a pep assembly one time, and I was the pep commissioner, and I was in LA the night before. There's three pep assemblies a year. Crazy ass is up in LA with Alex Caesar and Talon the night before, and I didn't even make it to an assembly. Like, get your shit together.
Yeah, dude. Whoops. But didn't Talon have a house up there, like, 17 years old?
Yes, with Frankie Delgado.
Yes.
Yes.
So that's where it all started. Then me and you, we all just started hanging. I think through the show, we got closer for sure.
Yeah. We were doing more events together. And you and Dieter, I was close with Dieter. Or I still am close with Dieter today. But then you guys got that place together, which seemed, I don't know at what point that decision was made.
Yeah.
That seems still so random.
Do you remember the building? Of course.
Yeah. There's this building at Figaro and 3rd in downtown LA.
And you guys were in downtown.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
It was not a good scene. Like, if you parked your car, if you were one spot underneath the freeway there, the 110, your car was getting broke into any night. But we would tell guests, do not park underneath the freeway. It's going to get broken into. And I think the whole rationale about living there was Dieter wanted to walk to Staples Center because that's all we ever knew of LA.
That makes sense, yes.
Before understanding the club scene in Hollywood, it was go to Kings games and go to Laker games. Mm-hmm. That's why we came up to LA. There was nothing else. So,
makes sense.
I think that proximity, but the place was a dump. It looks like a prison. Even it was still there. When I drive by, I'm like, huh, there was like the little ghost of us up there on the top left corner. We had a little penthouse, which it was not a penthouse. It had like one extra little room. It was a dumpy little apartment.
Well, that's why we didn't even have that thing furnished. We had Playboy came in.
That's what Steven said.
Remember when the girls door, the three girls that were with you, like that show that was on during that time, it was... So Kendra Wilkerson and like there was a
Holly Madison.
Holly Madison. And Bridget.
Yeah, and Bridget. Mm-hmm. So Holly came, right?
Yeah, I think it was Holly.
Holly
the
came
main
over.
Girlfriend.
Yeah, she came over and decorated our
somebody
apartment.
Threw, and I think it was one of the promoters at the clubs that we would go to through an opportunity our way. They're like, they're going to outfit your apartment with all this new furniture. We're like, fuck, free furniture? Why the hell not? Let's do it. Yeah. Playboy? Fuck it. We're down. So they come over unloading all this Playboy gear. We're talking about like tables and blankets and towels and all your cups and plates, everything had the Playboy logo on it. And you and I were like, fuck it.
Yeah,
like,
whatever. Just let it ride.
There's this photo shoot that exists somewhere. I remember one picture and it's the love sack that we got. And I think she's sitting in it and you and I are like on either side of her. Is that it? Okay, you know.
Oh
so by the way, that love sack, I used that for like 10 years. And then it was followed me around. It didn't have the Playboy logo on it. So I was like, all right, this
That's
one I can keep.
Yeah.
So it bounced around. I think every one of our friends underneath the sun has always slept on that thing.
Yeah.
And eventually we just left it on the street in West Hollywood.
Oh,
so
gross.
But the rest of the stuff, I mean, I think, I don't know, you couldn't take it anywhere. There were chairs for a dining room table that, you know, it was the head of the Playboy Bunny. Like that was...
Are you
that was
kidding?
The chair.
So you guys would like have friends over and you're like, oh, welcome.
Like, check out all this
we
shit
love
we got.
Playboy. Yeah.
Everybody's like, dude, this is sick. It's like,
right when you're 18,
yeah,
19.
We didn't care. Like, we were just stoked to have furniture. I mean, we literally went to IKEA. You came and sat on our dining room table. We had screws that came, like, build your own furniture.
Yeah.
The screws were coming through the top. People would like put their arms and scratch them and stuff. So
God.
We were so stoked to have all the
bring
all
a girl
that stuff.
Home to that place.
Oh, yeah.
Go over well.
Oh man, we had some fun times though. It was
what
it
about
was
can we just
exhausting.
Bring up real quick Miami?
When we go to the VMAs.
The VMAs.
Oh yeah. Mm-hmm. Wow. It was so fun.
It was incredible.
Was that when we went to P. Diddy's after party? And
yeah.
We couldn't get into the VIP section. So I remember like standing right up at the rope and he had a tray of shots. And I think it was with Christina. And he like came over with all these shots. We were like, thanks. And we like couldn't get up there in the VIP section though. I was like, P. Diddy gave me a shot. Yeah.
I remember that's where you lost your ID.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I got thrown in a pool or I jumped in a pool at one point and
yeah.
It was left somewhere around the pool area. And then somebody found it and gave it to a magazine and then they printed it.
Dude.
And
oh.
Remember it was so hot there that we were carrying around rags and it was just, you're sweating going on the red carpet or whatever. And so I had this rag, I put it on my head for some stupid photo op and I was like, and I went like that.
Oh my God.
And so the magazine ran that picture with like, we've got your fake ID.
Yeah.
It was just like, sweet look. My
that
mom's
is
like,
really funny.
What were you doing in Miami? And I'm like, it was just one moment. We actually were there for work. We were there
wow.
promoting the show. We just partied the whole time.
That trip was, that's when it started to get blurry.
Let's talk HelloFresh, you guys. With HelloFresh, you get farm fresh, pre-portioned ingredients and seasonal recipes delivered right to your doorstep. Skip the trips to the grocery store and count on HelloFresh to make home cooking easy, fun, and affordable. That's why it's America's number one meal kit. Flavor is in full bloom at HelloFresh. Enjoy the taste of spring with chef-crafted recipes featuring ripe seasonal ingredients delivered right to your door.
HelloFresh does more than just delicious dinners. Not only can you take your pick from 40 weekly recipes, but you can choose from over 100 items to round out your order, from snacks and easy lunches to desserts and pantry necessities. Everything arrives in one box on a delivery day you choose.
When the spring sunshine is calling your name, don't call for takeout. Get HelloFresh instead. Their quick and easy meals make feeding the family a cinch and without the high price tag. Their new fast and fresh options are ready in just 15 minutes or less.
That's right, guys. And no more just scouring the grocery store for that one ingredient, walking back and forth between all the aisles, trying to find the one thing to complete your recipe. HelloFresh takes away all that hassle by delivering fresh, pre-portioned ingredients so you have exactly what you need and it helps you cut down on food waste. You guys, I just moved last week and waiting by my door right when I got there with the moving truck was a box from HelloFresh, which I'm very grateful for because obviously everything was all boxed up. I didn't know where I was going to eat my meal that night. So bam, the convenience of HelloFresh coming in the clutch once again.
Love it. Okay, you guys, go to HelloFresh.com/Beach16 and use code Beach16 for 16 free meals plus free shipping. Again, that's HelloFresh.com/Beach16 and use code Beach16 for 16 free meals plus free shipping.
Now, you've said to me there's a couple year period where you just don't remember anything really.
No, man. So,
what age were you?
So looking back, I caught a couple glimpses of the show and just looking back and from say 18 to 23, I really don't remember much.
Wow.
I'll remember snippets and, you know, like I'll see different articles or different things that came out and it was a very tough time. But it was also a very blurry time. I was obviously struggling with alcoholism and addiction and, mm-hmm. you know, I was basically fighting for my life. And I wasn't fighting at that point. I was basically dying. Later on, I was fighting for my life. But it was a really trying time. 18 to 23 was really difficult.
So what made you want to come out of it and get your life on the right track?
You know, you'd think after looking back, I mean, my story, like the snapshot of it is, you know, I went to 13 different treatment centers from Florida to Hawaii, every state in between. I was arrested a dozen times. And the disease of addiction not only took me to contemplation, but attempting suicide. And going through all that stuff, you think that'd be enough. But there was a specific moment that was a very big moment of clarity for me. It was when I was sitting across just like this almost with my mom and my dad and my parents who were very, very instrumental in my life. And my dad looked at me, and I've only seen him break down once. And he looked across and he basically said, you know, this is after this is the 1,000th therapy session we've been in. And he looked at me and he said, Jason, mom and I don't know what to do anymore. You know, our marriage is suffering, you know, and we're like two planks of wood that are laying in bed waiting for the phone call that you're dead. And so when he said that, like, still, I remember it very vividly. At that moment, I said, you know what? Like, I know I don't care enough about myself, but I care enough about my family. And that became my motivation. Wow. And then about 6 months after that, that's when I really entered. July 23rd, 2010 is when, you know, it happened a day or two before that. I think I still dabbled for a second. And then when I went away to treatment again, they became my motivation. And wow. They became what I hung on to until I could finally find purpose and a sense of self-worth and have motivation to find who I am, because in the depths of my addiction, I really lost who I was. So I'd say from 17, you know, even going back a year prior from the 18 to 23, you know, I really lost sight of who I was and what I liked and what was important to me. And that's where my life transformed and changed.
I think that's what we've been so excited to have you on, just because we've seen obviously where you are today and knew where you were back then. And for me, you know, not understanding how to process how you were at that time, because I knew that you were on a tough path as far as the addiction. Like, it was there and it was obvious, but at 19, 20 years old, I didn't know how to like process that with a friend. It's like, oh, maybe he'll snap out of it. Right. Yeah. And I feel like a lot of people think that at that age is like, oh, he'll figure it out. He'll have some rock bottom moment. Maybe he'll get arrested. And he'll be fine. But what I've learned throughout this, all this time, dealing with, you know, friends and family and whatnot, you see that it's a process that takes a lot of time. And honestly, not everyone can come out of it. And to see how far you've come, because you went through a lot and you could tell that you were in a lot of trouble, or you're dealing with a lot, working through it, and see how you are now and how you've been able to turn that into helping other people and being so instrumental. I think it's really amazing. I mean, you talk about some of the things that you're doing today that you've spoken to me about. If you want to let
them. Oh yeah. So I mean, no, thank you for saying that. And it's, again, as I just want to preface, there's nothing I don't think anybody could have really have done then. We didn't have the knowledge or the resources of the education that we did back then. I mean, we were 17, 18, most impressionable and most impulsive age that you can possibly be in.
Totally.
And it's hard to try to provide some insight or clarity to that back then. You know what I mean? And so I think that's something which is great why we're even here, is to provide insight and education for other people that may be going through that process. There's a lot of things you can do today. But for me today, I co-chair a foundation called the Red Songbird Foundation, which its primary purpose is to be the most safe and trusted resource for anybody that struggles with substance abuse and mental health, be able to reach out to. We do lunch and learn seminars, educational. We partner with local city officials, do town halls, just raise awareness in that. And then our bigger arm is giving away scholarships. So last year, we gave $1.4 million away in treatment scholarships, which was incredible.
That's awesome.
Then So I've worked in the treatment space for the last 10 years. I work, you know, closely with Dr. Drew. I work very close with Dr. Daniel Hedrick, Dr. I, just some of these mentors that have been instrumental in my life working in that space, but really as being an advocate for recovery, is because what we're up against today, this is the leading cause of death in America for 50-year-old individuals and younger. And people don't realize what we're really looking at, especially having kids now. Yeah. The average age of first-time use is 11 years old. And so to see all these different things, I try to utilize what I've gone through to be a beacon of hope, to let people know that there's a better way out, to let them know that they're not alone and there is a solution.
Well, you talk about finding self-worth, because I do think that's a large part of it. So how did you begin that journey, and what did that look like for you to be able to stay sober all of these years?
And that's a really, really good question, because I mean, self-worth is one of the most important facets to this, right? And so in the early stages, I mean, for me, I had to really surrender. I had to get willing and I had to get open and honest. And that self-worth looked like being able to share how I really felt about myself and what I'd saw, because I was not comfortable with what I saw in the mirror. Was very ashamed, had a lot of guilt, had a lot of doubt. And once I was able to look at myself in the mirror and say, you're worth it. And you know, that there's a lot more to life here. I really kind of had to have that conversation with me. Mm-hmm. And I had to forgive myself. I had to take that opportunity to have grace for myself and, you know, really just put one foot in front of the other, because it doesn't happen overnight. I mean, it took years of destruction to get me to where I was at. Mm-hmm. I remember specifically just looking back over my life, like being in LA, all these mm-hmm. different things. Like, we grew up surfing, skating, snowboarding, yeah. wakeboarding, family trips, jet skis, you name it. In the depths of my addiction, I didn't go outside. You know, I'd have people at my house, 50 people, and I'd be in my room by myself. And so once I was able to get off the drugs, you know, actively arrest the disease, get stabilized, and to be in my own skin, I started to do the things that, like, I reverted back to when I was a kid, what I loved doing. I picked up a baseball. I went through the ball. You know, I went out and I started surfing again. When I first got sober, I was doing a quarterly surf trip to Hawaii, just with a bunch of buddies, and we do it every 4 months. We just go out to Oahu. And so, I mean, I really started to treat myself with and embrace what life has to offer. And again, is I think the biggest piece was all those things, right? And sorry, I can talk about this stuff.
No, I love it.
But it's like God was a big proponent in my life. And that's something that I've always held on to, for whatever you believe in. You know, for me, it's God. But it was also a service. You know, service was one of the biggest things. So after I got some time under my belt, you know, I kind of live with the mantra and the mentality of do something nice for somebody and don't get caught. And so when I would do those types of things, I started to get outside of self, especially when I was feeling down on myself, and you do something for somebody else. It's a great way to give back, but also to realize that you don't have it that bad. Mm-hmm. But there's a million different things that I did in the beginning. I mean, it's, again, I wish I would do it more specifically, but also there was a lot of unwinding, right? I mean, my brain, it took years. I remember when I went on Celebrity Rehab, that Drew looked at me. He's like, bro, like, we had a side con. I don't know if this is on the show or not. He's like, you have the alcoholism of a 55-year-old. And I was like, okay, you know? And he's like, the good news is you're like 22 or 23 years old. You can reverse this. Wow. And so, which is, again, everything's good. And so, but there was a lot of those, you know, shocking moments that happened in my life where it was just kind of like, wow, I didn't realize how much damage I was doing to myself.
During that time, would you equate any to what you're struggling with, or what you're going through? And it's, I know there's different layers to it, but your experience of being on a TV show and having this, you know, deeply personal stuff, or so people think, right? Of what MTV is portraying as your personal life, your relationships, your love, what's happening at 17 years old. Is that playing a significant role, or do you feel like you're, you know?
I love it. No, that's... And I've done a lot of work on myself. Mm-hmm. And so I can actually look back, and to answer your question shorthandedly, is it did not cause what I had struggled with. It definitely added fuel to the fire.
Sure.
But I can look back now, and Kristen, you may remember some of this stuff, I don't know. But when I was 12, 13 years old, I can see that I struggled without ever picking up a drink or a drug, I struggled with alcoholism and or addiction. And it, again, is the emotional state, the mentality that I had when I was young, and just the insecurities, just the anxiety, the depression. I told you just outside, you know, when I was 12, I struggled severely with OCD to the points where I'd wash my hands until they bleed when I was 11 or 12. Like, I was causing trauma, and I didn't realize that to myself when I was really young. And I didn't know how to come out. Like, you know, we're the cool group. We're the fun, like, outgoing, like, yeah. Behind the scenes, I wash my hands like every 14 minutes. You know, like,
really? You were still doing that?
Because then I ended up getting, I saw a psychiatrist. I got, you know, put on an SSRI.
Were your parents aware of this behavior?
Yeah, they were aware of all of it. But it was like, I was living this double life, right?
You don't
talk
about it with friends.
No, yeah. It was just like weird. And then, after I got put on medication down the road, then like it subsided. Yeah. And again, medication only helps minimize the symptoms. And it's supposed to allow you to actually do the work. Mm-hmm. That's what medication's for. A lot of people don't know that. They think they take the medication. Nope, my problem's fixed. Like, no, that gets you to a place so you can actually work on it. Mm-hmm. And I never did that. Mm-hmm. So basically at that age, and again, it's just with knowledge, and I don't even think anybody really offered it. It was like, yeah, take this and it'll help mitigate the symptoms that you're experiencing. Yeah. And so I took it, and lo and behold, and then it was just not all these other, it was just, it, the domino started happening. And then also, as I'm pre-genetically disposed to addiction. I think everybody is to some mm-hmm. degree. I mean, everybody wants to feel good, loved, liked. Mm-hmm. I think that's just natural.
100%.
But ultimately, some people get into unhealthier habits, right? Mm-hmm. And so for me, it was super severe. So that's all was there. The show did not cause that, mm-hmm. right? But looking at it it, you know, 18, 19, most of your friends are looking for fake IDs and they're just stoked to party. All of us were being paid to party, travel the world. Yeah. And we were living the dream. So it definitely ignited it, which I'm actually grateful for.
Exacerbated it for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah. I feel like, even seeing the show, the first couple episodes where you're, to me, clearly drunk on camera. It's great for them. It's where it's gold. For me in Cabo, what happens when I blow up on Kristen, I'm completely blacked out. And, you know, they paint you as this, you know, the bad boy, right? Mm-hmm. That's your character on the show. You know, you're playing these different girls and you don't care about them. You're just trampling hearts like it's no worries. And, you know, it's hard to for me to watch because I know you, who you are as a man, especially now. And for back then, understanding what I know now, that you were struggling and how you were handling that was like, you were probably the first one of all of our friends around our age to be like an alcoholic, to like clearly have a severe abuse issue, and no one was going to call it out to you or anything during that time. And so it was just, it's hard to watch that now and see those scenes where that are pivotal scenes in the show, right? That you're dealing with a relationship with Alex or with Jessica and you're drunk.
Yeah.
Were you drunk all the time when you were filming? Because, I mean, obviously you were going to school. You weren't drinking at school, right? I mean, how bad was it? Were you? Walk me through that because that's...
Yeah, so... Yeah. We'll finish.
Well,
sorry.
I remember it being similar to me, obviously, in the sense like we went hard. We partied our asses off. But I guess I just always thought you were at my level in high school. I didn't realize it was much bigger than it was.
Yes. And... You know, it really started to take off senior year. I forget the exact amount. I'd have to look back. I mean, I definitely missed a lot of school senior year. And that was attributed to to drinking and partying and just going to the beach. And mm-hmm. But also part of it was, you know, I don't even know that it was so much denial back then. Because 17, 18, it was just like, again, we're still developing, right? Like, I mean, we're going through.
And we thought it was pretty normal because a lot of us partied a lot, you know?
Exactly.
So I drank at the beach during the day too.
Yeah. And then I think we all had that group of friends that would leave at lunch and would smoke weed.
Yes.
I mean? And towards the end, I remember specifically a couple different times where we're drinking and that we brought, you know, put our Starbucks cups and we put vodka in it or whatever we did. And then, I mean, during one of our baseball games, we got smashed on the bus and smoking cigarettes in the bus. And it's crazy just kind of thinking about all this. And there was so many emotions that came up when I rewatched because there was just so many things that went through. But I definitely was struggling. I don't know if you guys remember, I actually went to boarding school at 17.
I do not remember that.
Yeah, I was out in Provo, Utah. For like 3 or 4 months.
So senior year.
It was junior year. And I came back that was more of like, it wasn't really so much alcohol related of why I went. It was just more behavioral, like this, you know, it was one of those things where I sat down with my parents are like, you know, are you open to this? And I was like, yeah, just, you know, wasn't combative.
Yeah.
Like, so I went and I probably should have been there for sure. But I was able to talk my way out of it and come back. And, and I was like, this isn't the right fit. But I went to a walkabout. I went to like a wilderness program, like lived out in the woods for 30 days came back and went to a boarding school for a few months.
Wow. So filming though, so do you remember a time when you were sober filming or did you use it as an excuse to drink because you're like, I get a little nervous or...
I think the only time I was sober was that damn hot rod episode. It was probably one of the only.
Dude, well played, sir. That thing was badass.
God. I would say I probably was drinking half the time on that show. But I also, looking back, I get to see now, like, God, first of all, I like laugh at it because like, I didn't even talk. I was the joke that I'm saying to you guys. Like, I was like a meme. I'm like, it was just like, you know, it didn't make any sense. But what I see now, which is cool, and again, with where I'm at, is I look back, I'm just like, wow, I was so insecure. Yeah. So just had so many of my own internal issues going on back then.
Yep.
That I can see that now. But back then, I didn't even realize that I had that going on. But like watching that, and 100% I drank to alleviate any social anxiety, just the cameras. It was all kind of new.
And it's the most personal stuff when it's relationships with girls, you know, and being in adolescent love. Like, probably the last thing you want to put on camera, which is like what's going on with you and your girlfriend, right?
Correct.
Is what's going on camera at that time and what MTV really wants from you. So,
if something's really happening, right? Like, it's to even be able, I was always very like, that's why when I drank it, it was just kind of came out. But I was there was a lot of things like I, either in the moment I was uncomfortable, I wanted to say something, but I was with all these cameras, I'm not going to say this.
I was in the same boat, man. I look back at some of the scenes when, you know, they're trying to replay this like full love triangle between Kristen and Lauren and myself. And they're having everybody, whether who I work with or friends, like ask me, so how do you feel about the girls, right? And it's just, those scenes are so cringy for me to watch because one, it's just, you know, it's just not not what I was doing the entire second semester of my senior year, but like, I don't know how to handle that question and talk about it there on camera. So I'm just kind of like laughing it off and not really saying much. And it's just, yeah, it's the same thing like you're saying. I'm like a mime. I'm not really saying much. I'm just kind of mumbling something and laughing.
Which works to their advantage.
And and then they still run with it because that's what they need for the show. So I can relate to your character on the show, if you will, in the sense that like you're not, well, this table of players.
Yeah, let's be real.
These are the bad boys.
Yeah, you called me out. You called me out on one of the episodes. I'm like, excuse me, Jason.
Yeah. You're two peas in a pod right there.
Yeah. Well, we were like thick as thieves.
Yeah, I know. Like, but which, and they don't show that on the show, actually, which kind of bums me out.
But I remember like me and you just, it was like,
We ran that town.
We showed up and it was over. Like,
I want to get into some of the fun, like more lighthearted stuff. I got to talk to you about Jessica and your relationship with Jessica.
Bless her heart.
Honestly, though.
Bless her heart.
You are a Nashville guy now. Bless her heart. It's like such a Southern thing here. But okay, did you like her? Why were you with her? Were there ever any good moments? What in the actual fuck?
Oh my God.
And how long were you guys together? Was it really only 2 months? She said two months on the show.
She did?
Yeah. And I remember.
That's a long time.
It is in high school, but we also were like, whoa. But for the amount of stuff that happened between you guys, it seemed like you guys were together for like two years.
Yeah. God. Jessica. Good old days.
Jessica Smithereens.
I kind of was just in this stage in high school. I think it was more of like, I was obviously not wanting to be committed with anybody. I just think it was just more of like, hey, like, let's just hang out and get down. And just put a title on it. And And so I think there was a couple attributes I was happy about when I was in high school, you know? I love you, Jessica. Like, yeah. Seriously.
I probably need to
make amends to her for everything that happened back then. But, you know, I think it was just really more of just kind of going with the flow.
Yeah.
There wasn't like, oh, I got to date her. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Was that the same thing with Alex? Or did you guys have more of a history through your families? I think we kind of learned about this on the show. You guys were friends for a long time.
Yeah. So Alex and I were friends for I think she was my first girlfriend in sixth grade.
Middle school.
Lauren and I were middle school boyfriend and girlfriend for a while.
Okay, yeah. So you gotta always
you've been holding on to that this whole time we've been filming this podcast.
You always gotta go back and revisit it, right? To make sure that it wasn't the right thing.
Of course.
Went back and Alex and I were even like a shorter stint.
It seemed like
that was like a few weeks.
Yeah.
Maybe longer.
She spoke about that.
Although I tell you what, you guys were making out at prom.
Yep. Mm-hmm. We were. Yep.
What happened to Cammie? Where was Cammie?
She was a good third wheel, you know? She hanging out. God. Cammie.
Do you remember going to prom with Cammie?
Now that you say that, I do. But you were to ask me who I went to prom with, I would have not known.
I forgot that I went with Talon.
Yeah.
Yeah,
no, it's,
I get it.
Yeah, no. And I think honestly, the first like real girlfriend that I was like happy about was Lauren. I think that was like the first one.
Well, you can see that. Yeah, watching the show, because we saw you with Jessica, we saw you with Alex, and then we were like, he just shouldn't have a girlfriend. But then we saw you with Lauren and we were like, oh, hang on a second. It's actually, you were really sweet with her. It was cute. And you can tell that you guys had chemistry.
Well, I feel like it's the real you.
Yeah.
I mean, with all the tough guy persona, like this is,
she softened you.
She opened you up.
I feel like she was allowed me to be able to be me and kind of brought the better traits out. And that was like the first relationship, probably in my life, that like was like a first real relationship.
So your first love.
Yeah, I mean, you could equate it to that. But I mean, that's like, you know what I mean? That's where like there was more seriousness to it. Like, hey, I'm not going to cheat or, you know, like it was like more committed. Yeah. So I think that was, definitely wasn't like that with anybody else.
Yeah.
How long did you guys date?
Couple of years.
Oh, wow.
And so on the show, we just watched episode, I believe, 13 of season 2. And it's your guys' the barbecue. And then we got the hot rod date.
Oh, yeah.
When you guys first start dating.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you remember like what point in your guys' relationship that was?
Okay. So you guys are going to have to help me remember this part. So when we did the promo shoots, because this is where it all started, is we did the promo shoots
between the two of you.
Yeah. So this is like the first time I met her. Like it was like we'd obviously through school, but we didn't hang out like anything like that. And that's what, like, I think to everybody's point, it was like the most random relationship.
Okay, but that actually makes more sense now, so, right? You guys were together because we were promoting the show and doing all of that.
Well, when we did this, it had to have been whenever that we were in the pool, like all of us were there. It was in Laguna, North Laguna. I remember that. And that was where like it all started. That specific like get together was where like we ended up like talking and hanging out. And then that's when it started. So
do you remember when that barbecue, where you guys kind of flirt, she's trying to take the cigarette away from you.
Oh God.
You guys have been like seeing each other for a couple weeks, couple months.
Because you could tell when they bring you up and Lauren's like, oh yeah, Jason can come. Like she lights up. So you guys clearly had been around each other. It wasn't like all of a sudden she just like figured out who you were.
Okay. So I'm going to ask you guys this is based on where you watching the show. Was that the introduction?
In the summer. Yeah, it is.
There's the date where you show up in the hot rod and Jim and Kathy are talking about you and she goes up and then you guys go out to dinner. And it's made to seem like it's a first date, kind of like this is just starting.
It was probably pretty accurate to that.
Did you guys go out without cameras before you did on the show? Besides the promo shoot, I'm sure we hung out. Yeah.
I'm sure we hung out for sure. Okay. But like if we did, I don't remember. But I'm sure we all, just kind of like the pool party and all those different things. Yeah. Like we all hung out like that. I don't know that we'd ever did like a one-on-one date.
Yeah.
If we did, I don't remember it.
Interesting. Okay. So the first date could have been one on camera.
It seemed like it was because like she was super giddy. You guys were smiley. Like it was very innocent and sweet, like a first date.
Mm-hmm.
I was just communicating in sign language.
Literally. I know.
Hey, honestly, from
a man of many words. Yeah.
Earlier in the season, you've got some words in this scene.
The more I drank, the more I talked. That's probably why they liked when I was drinking, dude. I actually started talking.
God.
But you were actually so happy when you guys got back to her house for the pool because you're like, oh, finally, I don't have to drive anymore, which you were like, now I can drink.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Oh, I didn't even realize that. That makes sense.
Yeah. That's
but it was funny because that scene, you guys go in the jacuzzi and she is like really trying with you. Like she's stands up. She's like playing with your hair. And you're like, do you want to go in the pool? And then it's like, oh, okay. And then you guys like go in the pool and she's like still like trying and flirting with you. And you're like, what? Like give her these like little pecks, but like nothing serious.
I know.
We talked about this. It's a lot of pressure a first date anyways, but then to have a camera crew and all these people watching you. I didn't have the booze in me yet.
Yeah.
I feel like you had to keep your shit together with Lauren. Like that wasn't going to fly.
I remember like that day and stuff.
Filming.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then you went on to do The Hills.
I did.
How many seasons of The Hills did you do?
I did the first season. Then I was like on like spotty on season 2 and 3.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah. But yeah, that was a whole nother. That's when things got bad. It wasn't like in the thick of everything, but that was when it really started to like start to escalate. Mm-hmm. And like my disease became, you know, they always say addiction's primary, chronic, and progressive. I was definitely in that progressive state.
Okay.
And, you know, probably like literally when we broke up, like that's when it just went like it was good timing for her. You know what I mean? Like seriously, it was not a healthy or conducive to be around that.
Yeah. All right, you guys, this episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. All you guys out there, you know, we've talked about this before. We prioritize our mental health here at Back to the Beach with Kristen and Steven. So we're checking in with you guys. How much time do you actually spend on yourself in a given week versus how much time do you spend on other people? And actually, how do you balance those two? Do you take the time to think about, all right, am I giving myself the room that I need to breathe and checking in with myself and making sure that we're on a path that we feel comfortable about? And you're not just, you know, brushing aside your mental health and the fact that you may have some feelings that you're not quite processing correctly. As you heard from me in this podcast, there have been a lot of feelings over many years of me trying to process my experience with Laguna Beach, the real Orange County, and not really taking the bull by the horns and actually processing them properly. But as I've gotten older, the mental health should never be taken for granted and actually should be something that you're checking in with weekly. And one way to do that is definitely BetterHelp. Kristen, you've done therapy before, right?
Yeah, I've talked about it a lot on this podcast, but I love therapy. I've been in and out of it for years. I mean, since I was little. And, you know, I've never walked out of therapy and not been in a great mood. I just find that it really helps you kind of get your thoughts together. I'm really good at compartmentalizing and pushing things aside. And so I think it's nice sometimes to have someone just pull everything out of you so that you just feel like you are able to get everything off of your chest. So I love therapy. I can't say enough good stuff about it.
That's great. You guys, if you're thinking of starting therapy, definitely recommend giving BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online and designed to be convenient, and super flexible, and suited to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist, and you have the option to switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. You guys find more balance with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/beach10 today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/beach10.
You guys, I love being really active with my kids. We love arts and crafts. We do puzzles together. My kids love being in the kitchen with me. But I am really excited to talk to you about this new company that I just discovered, and that is KiwiCo. If you have kids, you're going to want to listen up. KiwiCo is defining the future of play by making it engaging, enriching, and just plain fun. They create super cool hands-on projects designed to create a lifelong love for learning among kids. So each month, KiwiCo delivers crates packed with fun and sparks creativity with kid-friendly topics and activities. From engineering robots to learning about the science of cooking, there's interesting topics for every kid and real hands-on skills to explore. Discover subscription lines for infants and preschoolers to teens and beyond. You guys, we got 3 of these boxes delivered to us. And I gotta tell you, they were actually a lot of fun. My kids love cooking, and we actually got an ice cream making kit. So Jackson, one of my boys, was all about that one. I helped Sailor make some sort of a car. I don't even know exactly what it was, but it is an actual car that goes by itself and shoots out dominoes, which was pretty cool. So I can't recommend these enough because not only are they fun and creative, but you actually get to learn while doing this as well. To get these super cool hands-on science, art, and geography projects delivered to your door every month, you're going to want to check out KiwiCo. These are real engineering, science, and art projects with high-quality materials. There's something for kids of all ages, from discovering the science of magic to engineering a domino machine, which is what we had, plus a lot more. There's no commitment, so you can pause or cancel anytime. As a parent, we all know it can be hard to find creative ways to keep your children busy, challenged, and off their screens, which is the most important thing. KiwiCo does the legwork for you so you can spend quality time tackling projects together. So redefine learning with play. Explore hands-on projects that build creative confidence and problem-solving skills with KiwiCo. Get 50% off your first month plus free shipping on any crate line at kiwico.com/beach. That's 50% off your first month at kiwico.com/beach.
Okay, and then catch us up to where you are now, because so you and Lauren broke up when you were how old? 22, 21?
No. Oh, God. So we dated my senior year, right? And then we left. So probably dated like a year and a half.
Oh, okay.
I'm thinking about that. Like, so 1920-ish.
And then,
because I think we dated for a while and we broke up and then we got back together.
Oh, okay.
I want to say that's what happened.
I think I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. And so I want to say max 2 years.
No, okay.
Definitely over a year.
But. And then when did you meet Ashley, your wife?
Oh my God. I met Ashley actually in 2011. Yeah, 2011.
Okay. So after you got sober. So I got sober.
And so I basically promised myself and getting to know myself. And again, that's the other thing is like the best part about sobriety is I got to know who I am. Right. Mm-hmm. And like, I got to find out what I like. And, mm-hmm. and when you date people, when you're under the influence, it's not, you're probably going to surround yourself with, you know, those type of individuals when you're in that state.
Yep.
So being sober, you know, you're a product of your environment. So I was just surrounding myself with good people and we connected back in 2011. She has to tell you guys the story. It's so much better how we first met. Cause I actually met her when I was out, like still drinking and stuff. And then we didn't talk for like a year and a half. And then we got reconnected through mutual friends and then went on our first date and the rest was history. But there's like a bunch of stuff that happened between on that day when we were out. It's funny, but no, she is incredible. And I knew she was the one. Again, I probably had 10, 11 months of sobriety and she came to my 1 year sobriety with me. Like I had like a big party in Santa Monica and it's like a celebratory thing. And after that, she basically said, "Hey, look, like to support you, I'm not going to drink anymore." And I was like, well, it's really powerful. And cause I told her, one of the first things I said, look, my sobriety is the most important thing to me. If I don't have that, I have nothing else. And so that kind of created this conversation where, again, that's a normie. Somebody could just stop like that and you take it or leave it. But I knew when she said that and like how important my sobriety was to me. Because this is the first time I actually was like enjoying life again.
Yeah.
And like felt like, you know, present and had a passion and had purpose. And but she was really supportive. And yeah, we've been together. God, we got married 10, 12, 13. I did that so I can remember it. but we've been together. So yeah, so we've been married 8, 9 years and together 11.
And have two years, kids.
Two kids, Delilah and Wyatt.
Yeah.
How old are they?
Delilah is 4 and a half and Wyatt is 11 months.
Yeah.
Come a long way, man.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, you guys have a beautiful family.
No, thank you really. Very much.
It's been fun because we're, you know, 15, 20 minutes from each other and we get our kids together and it's just been really nice to be able to reconnect. And also Cedric is moving here too. Oh, so yes. We're really getting the gang back together.
Yeah, that MTV.
Yes.
Dust off the old cameras.
Yeah. Right?
We're going to be coming
season
out here.
Four.
Yeah.
Takes on Nashville.
Maybe you should come next, Steven.
You know, I'll get a little piece of land
Steven.
Out here.
Dude, come on, bro. Get out here.
Okay, so I want to know, do you have a favorite memory from the show overall? Or not, and it doesn't even have to be something specific if you don't remember specifics. It could just be, are you happy you did the show? Was it a positive thing for you in your life?
Yeah, like I'm really grateful we did the show. Mm-hmm. You know, and I would, back in the day, I would have probably like, oh, it's so lame. Like, we shouldn't have done that. But right. Like, actually looking back now, it was a very cool experience. And to be able to look back and to see where I was at and to see what I do today, it's very rewarding. Mm-hmm. It's amazing. I mean, we were part of, you know, like a phenomenon. Totally. I mean, that show was what revolutionized the way TV was done. Mm-hmm. And it was a cool experience to be a part of it. And obviously there's things that I wouldn't have, you know, I wish I wouldn't have done. Mm-hmm. But I'm also grateful for the way everything happened because it's allowed me to be who I am today. what about you guys? You guys happy you did the show or no?
Oh, completely. I mean, and like you said, I mean, there's obviously moments I'm not proud of, but I think the biggest thing for me was at that age, I didn't know who I was and I was definitely edited and portrayed a certain way. And what it did was really made me look inward and be like, I don't think I'm this girl, but I know that I don't want to be this girl. And so I think it really made me grow up and get my shit together, honestly. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. There was a time where I struggled with the show and I think it was almost in denial that it was even there. Mm-hmm. And that was like 5 years, or the first 5 years after it aired. And then from there, I think it started to go into where I felt like I was okay. I'm like, okay, I've dealt with it and I'm kind of found my path.
Right.
And working on other things, you know, building who you are and kind of getting your identity of what you want instead of what MTV was portraying us as. And thankfully from there, it continued to only gain momentum of like a comfort level with having done the show and glad that I did it. And even at its worst time, right after the show aired, when it was completely uncomfortable with all the attention that we got from it, or just so blindsided by it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That it was this, mm-hmm. you know, kind of phenomenon that I was in so much denial about people actually watching the show. It's like, nope, this is actually the numbers are there and people are watching it. And eventually, you know, it got to a more comfortable place. And then there was a time about, I don't know, 5, 10 years ago where as podcasts were coming around, I'm like, I want to revisit the show. Mm-hmm. I'm ready to go back. Because I've seen some parts and I just want to go through that experience it because I'm also now getting to a more mature spot because I was so insecure about it back in the day. Just like you're saying, at those times and us on camera when we're dealing with our relationships, so incredibly insecure.
And emotional about it.
Emotional,
too.
Did not know how to process my emotions, did not know mm-hmm. who I was.
Yeah.
I was just trying to fit in and be cool yeah. and have fun, right? Yeah. So to then, you know, have some maturity into my 20s and it's interesting. It always stayed as something I'm glad that I did because we got... You know, there's certain opportunity that you can get from it. But then, yeah, I think to have certain things we can look back on to also this fascinating aspect, I think at this point of doing this podcast, all these years later, finally 18 years later, we're rewatching it and we're dissecting it and learning new moments that you totally forgot about, mm-hmm. but they're buried back there and they're being dusted off and you're uncovering those and being grateful that you can look back and be like, fuck, I've come a long ways. I'm glad that I'm not there anymore. I've learned a lot from that time. And it's a unique experience, which we're all just trying to float around on this rock here on Earth and trying to learn experiences and get a little wiser and hopefully, you know, live a good life. And I feel like that the show at that time, seeing it back then is much more comfortable about it all these years later. Mm-hmm. So you're like, I'm not there anymore. I'm in a completely different place in my life. Mm-hmm. So you appreciate it almost like it's another person. You know?
I didn't know that you went through that process, you know?
I mean, it was, it's just tough, man. I think that because of what I went through with my relationships, like what Chris and I went through behind cameras and then what they put on camera, you know, Lauren and I's friendship, what we went, what happened behind cameras and then what they put on camera.
Yeah.
It's, they're different stories. There's relations. Of course, look, the foundation was there of like what happened between us, but then it's just, you know, it's not something you're comfortable with and takes a long time to process.
Yeah.
At least for me.
No. And I think it, something just came to me. I appreciate you sharing that, but something that came back. I think I wish they, I wish they portrayed us more accurate to who we were.
Yeah.
I think that's one thing just came to my mind is like, it worked. It was, it almost fed the ego, right? I had this overinflated ego with an underestimated sense of self-worth and they gave me this character. I'm like, dude, I can do that. I can, you know, I'll start doing beer bongs full of vodka and, you know, and like,
man, 100%. Yeah.
They showed like one little side of who we were. Exactly. And I think there was so much more to us, like for all of us, that they could have got to know more. And like, we were kind of just put in, like you said, they were obviously they're creative and they're smart and they knew what they were doing because it worked, but they put us in these little boxes, compartmentalized us into what was beneficial. And
we couldn't sway outside of that box.
We didn't know either. We were so new to this. I had no idea what to expect when we were doing this. Right. No. And like looking at what Laguna Beach became and like looking at, like what was made of that, dude? Like, I mean, from the count, like just literally from merchandise to just everything that came out of that whole show. I'll never forget the first moment I went down to the gas station in Laguna after the first episode aired. And it was just like, what the hell just happened, dude? This car got bum rushed.
Wow. Yeah,
and
that's crazy.
It was gnarly.
They were selling like star maps around Laguna, instantly changed the whole dynamic around town for a little while. But in you saying, you know, talking about our personas, you know, I remember the one thing was like, all right, this whole love triangle thing was difficult. And I remember that was kind of a storyline for me that was throughout and what I remembered from the show. But watching the show now, there are other parts of my personality they're trying to make into this character. Like the jealous rage or, you know, just like a shitty guy that's like, you know, blatantly steamrolling these people's feelings. Like, you're just like, I was surprised because I actually remember more of like, oh, wow, they really jumped on Kristen and made her like the bad girl, right? They made you the bad guy, right? And I remember that. And then I'm watching the show and I'm like, shit, there's these other parts about me. I was like, no wonder I just buried this. I was like, I can't watch this ever again because it's like, this is just so surreal. And back then, we couldn't ever defend ourselves.
Correct.
There's no social media. We had no publicists like at the time.
It's so true. I mean, just how that whole process came together. You know, I'm excited to actually listen to how you guys, because I wasn't a part of the first season. So I'm excited to hear you guys' revisit to the first season.
It's been how it all happened. So fun just to be able to go back. And for me, honestly, it's cleared up so much being able to have you break it down with me. Also, you remember so many more details than me. Yes.
So much.
I'm like, I don't remember anything, but you come in with all these little nuggets and I'm like, thank God we have you, Steven. But it's been really nice just to go through everything because I also walked away from the show being like, MTV fucked with me. Like just me and nobody else. And now I'm sitting here and I'm like, no, they fucked with everybody the same amount.
Yeah.
And I was so wrapped up in my own world at, you know, 17, 18 that I didn't realize that. Like, I never realized how much they messed with you too. I just believed everything caused a lot of friction between the two of us. But, and watching you and your love triangle now, and they're always trying to force these fucking love triangles because it worked so well season one. But you realize everyone was edited just as much and manipulated just as much. And so I actually have a lot more compassion for everybody when I made it all about me for a long time.
Right? Yeah.
You're, typical. Yeah.
I get it.
Your first scene was fascinating to me. Do you remember the first scene of your first episode?
Was that at Casey Reinhardt's house?
I think it's right around there, but you're actually the batting cages with Cedric.
Oh,
shut up. No. I'm getting flashbacks right now.
I'm not going to go in the whole scene, but to me, the moment is when Cedric talks about your baseball game that day.
Yeah.
And he's like, what time is it? You're like, I don't know. You just like crush a line drive. He's like, you pitching today? You're like, I don't know. You crush another line drive. Like, I'm looking at it like, oh, MTV's got their guy.
Oh, yeah.
Dude. I'm just loving this.
Oh,
like,
my
this fucking badass
boy.
Over here.
Oh, my
Here's
God.
Our bad boy. We're going to ride him through 18 episodes.
You want to know what people always say to me? They're always like, was Jason really in high school? I'm like, yeah, no, he was.
Yeah.
Yes, he was 17 and 18. Yeah.
Dude, that's what people, it's so funny. I mean, how many people are like, how old are you really? Like, you know, old am I really? Like, but everybody, I mean, always thought I was way older.
Yeah.
Way older.
Yeah.
You know?
The beard was going strong early.
Yeah, it was.
You brought it out early.
Freaking came out of the womb with a mustache, bro. You know what I'm saying? No, but it was, well, this is like incredible to just relive this. And it actually is motivating me to want to go I've never actually like sat, you know, when the show came out, we got those VHS tapes. It was like, dude, let's put that thing in. Mm-hmm. Let's see what's going on. And and it was like you made a moment of it. But since then, literally since 2005, I mean, whether it was on the, it's not like I sat there and paid attention, you know, if it was on the background or if it was on, oh, let's see what this episode's about.
Yeah.
So it actually is kind of like, I think it's at that spot where it'd be, it's that time to pull it out.
It's been therapeutic. I highly recommend.
Yeah.
Isn't it telling though that we all watched it, we got the VHS tape, put it in, and then you never watched
it
ever
again.
Yeah.
I know.
You can tell that we're
black it out of our memory.
Trying to process it at that age. Yeah. Like, I don't, you know what? Let's just lock that away move on.
You know what the hardest part was though, is because we had nobody. Not even your parents. Nobody to go talk to or process because nobody could relate to it.
That's such a good point.
Meanwhile,
nobody.
This world that we're living in LA, these blogs and whatever are writing stuff about us or adding fuel to the fire of this character that MTV's built for you. And it's a weird twilight zone that you don't know how to process.
Well, I remember chat rooms were a new thing then. And I remember going on and reading and people would rip me apart. And it affected me. And so another reason I'm glad we didn't have social media then, because I can only imagine having people talking directly to you. Like now I don't give a shit, you know, but at the time I was super vulnerable to that. So that was hard too.
That you bring up a really good point. On that note though, is when I was going through all that addiction stuff, you know what I mean? Seeing all that shit, that also just added, I mean, whether you're checking out at the grocery store, there's another mugshot of you or like wherever it was just
you can't get away from it.
Yeah. And it was just kind of like, there's so much shame associated with that. Yeah. So it's like, even though you wanted to get help, you didn't even, like wherever you went, it was just like, you were constantly judged or there was, you know, just everybody felt like they knew you without even being able to explain who yourself was. That was like the very isolating, it was a really challenging time.
It is. Yeah. We've been looking forward to this and this was even better than I thought it was going to be. You truly are such an inspiration and I'm so proud and happy for you. And I love that we've been able to reconnect and that we're in each other's lives now, you know, and we appreciate you coming on this podcast so much and being so vulnerable and opening up. I think it's really important and you've been able to directly affect people's lives in a really positive way. So thank you.
Thank you, Kristen. No, Steven, honestly, both you guys, love you both. This was amazing. And, loved doing it and just appreciate you having me on.
It's great to see you, man. Thank you
as well.
Thanks for listening to Back to the Beach with me, Kristen Cavallari, and the best ex-boyfriend ever, Stephen Colletti.
We are so stoked to bring you along on this journey back through Laguna Beach with us.
You can find us on Instagram at Dear Media Studio, hashtag BTTBpod, at Kristen Cavallari, and at Stephen Colletti.
Got any questions about the show? Give us a call on our Back to the Beach hotline, 1-844-LAGUNA-0.
And if you like our show, please make sure you follow or subscribe wherever you're listening to this so you don't miss an episode. And don't forget to leave us a rating and a review.
Back to the Beach is a Dear Media production hosted by Kristen Cavallari and Stephen Colletti.
Our show is produced by Rosalie Atkinson.
Post-production by Amanda Vandekar, Michelle Harrison, and Taylor O'Connor.
Music supervision by Jonathan Lane.
Our theme song is Come Clean, written by John Shanks and Cara Diaguardi.
Cover composed by Steve Shebby.
And our executive producers are Jocelyn Falk, Paige Port, and Michael Bostick.